I'm Natasha Feener, I'm the historical architect at the SHPO office. And today's session is on the tax credits, the new exciting state tax credit and the tried and true federal credit. And with us, we have today a couple speakers. We have Bonnie McDonald and Colleen Gallagher from the IRS. I think at this point in the session or in the conference, Bonnie needs almost no introduction. We've seen and heard a lot from her, and we know that she's a superstar of the Preservation Alliance. Actually, someone from New Hampshire, SHPO, called you a superstar, Bonnie. So you're well known throughout the nation at this point. So I think I'm just going to go ahead and ask Bonnie to come up and speak. I'm going to do a little in-between guidance on how the process of the state tax credits, and then Colleen's going to give us a talk about the number crunching, the real mechanics. So I'll give it over to Bonnie here, and then I will take over after that. Here is her bio.
At this point, yeah, as you said, you've seen me enough to know I'm executive director of the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota, the statewide historic preservation nonprofit advocacy and education organization. And I am thrilled that Natasha and Colleen are allowing me to present with them, because as far as the state tax credits go, the actual application of them is not my specialty. It's really the advocacy on behalf of them that is the specialty that we bring to the table. And so I'm pleased to be able to start the presentation today, because I'm giving the background to you on how it is that the state historic tax credit came to be. And I really should not be standing up here alone, but doing a tag team is not appropriate, because my partner in crime, David Kelleher, is in the audience and really has led the tax credit effort for the last 11 years out of the Minnesota Historical Society, you know, in partnership with our friends at the State Historic Preservation Office. So just to state that I'm here representing a coalition of hundreds of people who have had a voice in this effort. So just to recognize that all of you are, we're really here to get this done. All right, I'll just forward it from this point. The State Historic Preservation Tax Credit was signed into law this year, just this year, on April 1st, and we were a little bit afraid that April 1st was going to somehow be a joke. And I had developers who were calling me thinking that April Fool's Day was really some kind of joke that the governor was playing on us and was not going to actually sign the bill. But in the end, certainly, Governor Pawlenty signed into law the Minnesota State Historic Preservation Tax Credit, which is under Session Laws 2010, Chapter 216. Minnesota became the 31st state in the nation to pass a state historic credit that pairs with the federal historic rehabilitation tax credit. And just to tell you that we were one of 10 states that was still without a state tax credit. So we were quickly becoming one of the last states in the nation that did not have some kind of incentive that would allow for really the pairing with the federal tax credit to make the rehabilitation of historic structures possible in our state. And the advocacy that we did on behalf of the credit was done not focusing necessarily on all of the projects in the Twin Cities that could utilize this credit, but on the statewide impact of this program. And we used properties like the Palace Hotel in Crookston as a great example of how the tax credit would have an economic impact all across the state. This is one of the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota's 10 most endangered historic properties, and we talked about how it would really create not only an economic generator in downtown Crookston, but how many jobs it would create. This year, the work that was done at the legislature was all about jobs. And you can imagine how the legislators are getting pressure from their constituents, from businesses in the area, and from, frankly, the bottom line of our budget, that we need to create jobs in this state. We are continuing to lose jobs. And as we move in, I'll talk about the forecast for the future of the budget and how we're going to approach that. But the pressure was on to really do anything that they could to stimulate jobs. So the background here is that we started the effort to pass a state tax credit in 2000. That's when our first bill was introduced. And we did so following the example from Missouri. If you're not familiar with the Missouri State Historic Tax Credit, it has been an incredible economic generator in that state. Missouri leads the nation in use of the federal historic tax credits. And that surprises many people because Missouri, really? Why is it that they have such an incredible impact with their federal credits? It's because they have such an attractive state historic tax credit to pair with it that it buys down the cost to really do these projects. So in the time that they've had it since 1997, they've generated over $1.3 billion in economic activity with their state and federal tax credits. So our effort continued from 2000 until 2006, really doing a lot of education of the legislators working, and David has been here since the very beginning working on this, to ensure that they understood the impact that we could have with the state tax credit. In 2007, we actually had some great success getting into the omnibus tax bill. We didn't make it to the governor's desk, unfortunately, and we continued getting into different versions of the bills, just to let you know that this has been a steady ramp up to passage. So it's not that we just got this incredible Hail Mary pass. It's been a lot of effort over time. We joined the Building Jobs Coalition as a coalition ourselves between the Minnesota Historical Society and the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota. The Building Jobs Coalition was a group of developers, real estate agents, contractors, labor unions who were working to create jobs all across the state and to try to get the legislature to pass some kind of public policy that would ensure we could create jobs in the construction industry, and specifically the vertical construction industry. In 2009, we started to see the stimulus funding coming into play here in the state of Minnesota, but it was doing a lot of horizontal construction, road construction, which didn't really work for the unions who were doing vertical construction like steel erection or who were working on the cranes, for example. So we saw this as a prime opportunity to demonstrate how historic preservation was really about jobs. Because as all of you know, historic preservation creates more jobs per capita than new construction. It is more labor intensive, and so we were able to demonstrate that we would create more jobs by passing this historic tax credit. Thankfully, through the Building Jobs Coalition, we caught the eye of Senator Tom Bach, who was a former union carpenter before he became a senator and the chair of the Senate Taxes Committee. So he resonated with our message and understood that putting this into the jobs bill that they were creating was going to stimulate the kind of construction jobs that he wanted to see. So we continued to advocate on behalf of jobs and making that case. The labor-intensive numbers that we used were very impactful. We demonstrated that if we passed a state tax credit, if we were similar to other states, we would create between 1,500 and 3,000 jobs in the state of Minnesota on an annual basis. In Missouri, the credit recoups virtually all of the payout of the credit in payroll taxes alone, and it comes into the state of Missouri through those payroll taxes before the tax credit is even let. So we were able to say that we could create the credit without the money going out the door right away. We were going to generate some tax money that would pay it out. So that made the legislators somewhat more comfortable. And the return on investment is incredible. We were able to say, if we pass this state tax credit, we're going to generate at the upper end of $8.53 for every dollar that the state is going to pay out, which is an incredible return on investment. There are very few economic development tools that have that kind of ROI. We knew that we would leverage public and private investment, so we were able to say, hey, $1.373 billion of economic activity in Missouri alone, and that is not a rare case. Across the rest of the state, we were able to look at those ROI numbers and bring them in, not only from Missouri, but Maryland. Rhode Island has an incredible ROI as well. So we're replenishing local tax base. That's how we were able to convince the League of Minnesota Cities to come in with us as a partner as well and to talk about how we were going to leverage some local tax base as well. And as our cities lose local government aid, they're looking more and more at how they're going to create tax base. So by taking vacant and underutilized properties, bringing in private investment into them, and increasing tax base, it's a win-win for the local governments as well. Finally, some of the legislators did resonate with the message that the greenest building is the building already built. And we were talking to them about not only leveraging private investment and creating jobs, but sustaining cultural assets that are really irreplaceable and preventing those assets from going into a landfill before the assets had come to their functional end of their life. So talking through to them some success stories like Lower Town, which the Lower Town Reinvestment Corporation has worked on for the last 30 years using federal historic tax credits, and saying, you know, had we had a state historic tax credit, work like this could have been facilitated much more quickly at a district-wide level. And if we can show them in a period of time what we can do with this tax credit, we know that we can stimulate activity all across the state. So the program features in Minnesota, I know that Natasha and Colleen are going to talk more specifically about this, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but just to say that we have some peculiarities in our bill, and I wanted to tell you why we have some of these peculiarities. So from a legislative standpoint, entering into this discussion, we not only needed the support of Senator Tom Bach, the chair of the Senate Taxes Committee, but we needed the support of Representative Ann Lincheski, the chair of the House Taxes Committee. And Representative Lincheski believes that that unfortunately tax credits are not the best way to facilitate the capital asset investment in a project from the state's point of view. She thinks the most efficient way of doing that is through a grant program, because there's an outright allocation of money right to the project, and there's no middle person, no syndicator that needs to have a cut of that credit, the way the credits work. And so she has worked for a number of years to try to get us, the advocates, to change our tax credit to a grant program. And our development friends said that is not going to work for us. So we had to go into negotiations with Representative Lincheski and ask her how we could be of utmost help but get what we needed for the developers who were going to use this this asset, this incentive. And so thankfully she was willing to compromise with us. We were willing to compromise with her, and through some very smart people coming to the table from the SHPO office, from MHS, some of our friends as well from the real estate and legal field, we came to have a program where we have both a tax credit option and a grant option, which is the only credit we know of in the country that has this grant program and tax credit. It's quite peculiar. Thankfully, the legislators understood that the way we were going to create the most jobs was if we had an uncapped program. And what that means is there are many programs across the country that have either an aggregate cap. Their whole program has, say, in Iowa, it's $50 million. So that's as much money as they can allocate to a tax credit program the entire year. If you have a large project, if you think of, say, the Sears building, that was $180 million, think of a 20% credit on that, and that could take up a majority of that in a single year. So here, they realized if we had that, we couldn't stimulate the most jobs if we had a cap. Some other states have a per program cap or per project cap that would be the same. So our legislators took a huge leap of faith, and they did not cap the program. So we are very lucky because we have an uncapped program. It's something called certificated, which means it's very easy to sell that certificate, that credit certificate. It's nice and easy and clean for the developers to sell that. And we are at a 20% historic tax credit that matches the federal program. So it's an incredibly attractive credit, and that's why it's known as one of the best in the entire country right now. There are some flaws, as we're finding out, and we will be going back to the legislature in 2011 to try to work with the flaws and to make it a cleaner bill if possible. I wanted to tell you that there are some challenges, and we're going to need your help to go back to the legislature. One of the challenges is that this is a temporary bill. It was seen as a measure just to create jobs during the recession. So they gave us a sunset of 2015, and therefore we have to go back with numbers that we've created jobs, we have sustained historic properties, we have increased tax base. That is why in the bill, the State Historic Preservation Office is mandated to do an annual report to the legislature on those numbers, job creation, reinvestment statistics. So we've got a fight ahead of us because Minnesota has a $6 billion projected budget deficit in this coming year. And they're going to be looking at every potential dollar that they could bring back to the state. And therefore, they could essentially rescind this tax credit. In fact, to get our tax credit, they had to rescind another one. So it has happened. And we are going to be watching for bills that would reverter bills that would take our tax credit off of the table. So we're watching that very carefully. We're a little nervous that they're going to try to cap the program so that they know just how much money they have to allocate for this, that they may have a per project cap, or that they may repeal the entire program, as I said. So this is really the time we need all of you to be joining our Action Alert Network at the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota so that you're getting email notices, because something may change on a daily basis. Really at a half-daily basis, we might see a bill come forward, and we need all of you to respond immediately to talk to your legislators about why we need to keep this tax credit. The ramp-up period on this program is very slow as well, so when we go back with the annual reports from the legislature, we might not have much to report the first 2 years of this bill. Therefore, they may think that nobody wants to use this incentive, and that is not the case. The ramp-up, as you know, the development period on a historic preservation project can be, 18, 24 months before we actually see the part three come through when we have an occupancy permit on this. So the numbers, we may not have a lot to report at first. We may have to have anecdotal information. So we need to hear the stories from all of you about what's coming down the pike, what's in the pipeline, and what projects are potential as well. We're a little nervous about sticker shock at the legislature. You might have read, for example, in Finance and Commerce or the Star Tribune, there is a potential project to use the State Historic Tax Credit on Cedar Riverside, Ralph Rapson's Cedar Square West building, and we're a little nervous that the legislators might not have had that kind of a project in mind, a project that is less than 50 years old, that is trying to be put on the National Register so that they can use the State Historic Tax Credit on this. And that would be a very large project as well. I think that the tax credit is estimated somewhere at 13, 18 million on that. So that would take a lot of the project, the program. We also need to clarify the law, as I said. So we'll be heading back to do some of that work, and we really need your help to ensure that we have this tool going forward to do projects like the Pillsbury A Mill, which has been on the table for a number of years. This is a National Historic Landmark property that is vacant, that we're nervous what the future is for that property, and the State Historic Tax Credit was envisioned to be there to ensure that we could provide the gap financing to get projects like that done. So we have an advocacy strategy that we are crafting, and we need your help to go back to the legislators. Make sure you go to historymatters.org, which is the Minnesota Historical Society's really their advocacy page, or to the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota's website, where we'll be giving you updates about what is happening at the legislature. We're going to return to them starting January 4th, which is the start of the legislative session, to talk to them about all of these features and get there proactively right away to say thank you and why this is such an important program. What resources have we saved? What is the statewide distribution of this funding? How many jobs have been created, etc.? It is important for all of you, though, to pick up the phone, to write an email, or even to visit the legislators when they're in district to say thank you to them. They need to hear that this program is impactful. And finally, we need your help to really save it. I've said we need you on our Action Alert Network to respond to alerts, to be in contact with the legislators, especially to use the credit. You may not be the developer, but you might have contacts out there who could use the credit. So I'm glad that you're here this morning. We have experts to listen to who are going to tell you how to use this credit, answer your questions. But I am very pleased to talk to you about the advocacy efforts, and please continue to work with us going forward. Thank you.
Introduction to how you actually use the credits. So clearly there's a federal credit that's been in place for about 30 years now and has been really successful. It's a 20% credit on eligible rehabilitation expenses. And there's now the new state credit for another 20%. So kind of the unbelievable 40% credit on your rehabilitation expenses. A lot of people ask, is it one or the other, or is it really combined, or how does that work? And it actually is a 40% credit on your rehabilitation expenses. And that's pretty much anything that you're going to be doing inside of the historic building. It doesn't include work on additions or landscape, and there's a number of other things it doesn't include, but generally pretty much any kind of work that you're doing on the inside of the building that isn't fixtures and furniture and that sort of thing. Colleen will be able to tell us a lot more about that. The program is run by a number of partners. The National Park Service are the final reviewers of the program. The State Historic Preservation Office is your primary point of contact and your reviewer, the first reviewer of the project. You submit everything to us, and then and you work with us directly for advice and on how to follow the standards and that, etc. The Internal Revenue Service is the partner for the tax program on the federal side. And now we have a new partner, which is the Minnesota Department, State Department of Revenue, and they're going to be your tax advisors, or not. I'm not sure what you would say, Colleen, what they would be, but they're going to help with the state credit. So keeping those two separate all the time, just like we file our different tax returns. Obviously, there's a lot of different projects that we've had. We've got some different projects up here on the screen. There's the giant projects, like kind of the Grain Belt, which, you know, is $16 million and is part, you know, we use the federal credit. And the federal credit has had a lot of great effects. As you can see, the 2009 statistics show an estimated 70,000 extra jobs in the country because of the credit. A lot of different projects. And you can see the average project size is about $4.5 million for the state credits, or excuse me, the rehabilitation expenses. But I like this project here in Henderson, which I liked everyone to notice is only $85,000, so you don't need some sort of grand, massive project to make this happen. And in fact, all you need is the larger of the two $5,000 or meeting the adjusted basis or the IRS's substantial rehabilitation test, which we'll go over some of the other things, those qualifications in a bit here. We have been the 24th state as far as activity goes in the nation because we haven't had a state credit. States like Missouri, states like Virginia are very active because they do have the state credits, and now we have it. And what we had was $18.7 million in certified expenses. That's when it's certified expense, it's like the end of the project and you've completed and submitted your credits. And that's what we had last year, was $18 million. We had four projects, I believe, come certified last year. Right now, and I had about four on my desk, kind of in process before the state tax credit. We're looking at about 20 of them right now. They haven't all submitted, but they're very interested in thinking about it. There's about, I'm estimating about $100 million of in part twos right now instead of the what we're looking at, about 19. Obviously, they haven't gotten to the point of being certified and gone through the whole process and been successful throughout the process, but you can just kind of see the amount that we're ramping up to almost immediately. And what I'm talking about, needing time to ramp up, but obviously we've got people's attention and So there's going to be a learning process of how to use the credits, because there's a lot of new people coming to the table, but and hopefully a lot of Main Street projects. Small guys like this that will make that, the 40% will make it worth everybody's time. It looks like something else up there on it, but it's to qualify for the state tax credit. And there's essentially a couple things that you need to do to make the project qualify, or not make, or projects that do qualify. And the building has to be on the National Register or in a contributing building in a National Register district. Now, because the state credit, as I believe Bonnie mentioned, is not, can't be recaptured like the federal credit, the state credit is much more rigorous about wanting all the ducks in a row right away. And so we're gonna be talking about wanting the building on the register or in process right away. Must be a building. So the big fish would not qualify. That's what that means. Or the Jolly Green Giant. Must be an income-producing property, so rental, business, office, that sort of thing. Must be depreciable. And it must meet the IRS substantial rehabilitation test, which I think Colleen is going to really define for us, so I'm not going to describe that too much right here. And it must meet the Department of Interior standards for rehabilitation, which is kind of really what SHPO is all about, making sure happens. The rehabilitation standards, as you might have been in part of Audrey Tepper's review of the standards yesterday, she had an hour, she raced through it, and she didn't cover all the things she wanted. So this is a very, I'm going to give you like the 2-minute version of that. The rehabilitation standards are the standards for reusing buildings for different uses, for updating them, really bringing them up to the 21st century. And so it's about finding a compatible use and making sure that the use that you select for the building is really works with the building, so you don't have to make major changes to the building to make it work. Here we have a place that used to be a convent, so it had a lot of little rooms, and it got turned into apartments, and you got kind of rooms connected, and it worked with it instead of turning it into offices or some sort of other incompatible use. But this particular one was a great project in Duluth that really worked out because they selected the right new use for it. And here we have a barn, and it became a kind of a dance hall and reception center, which was another great use for income-producing use for a barn. And as Audrey said in her talk, there's kind of three main points to the rehabilitation standards without going into it in real detail, is to repair and retain rather than replace. So that's about retaining your historic windows rather than replacing them unless they're beyond repair. It's about, if it's a slate roof and it's got 50 years left in it, then we'll repair the roof instead of replacing it, that sort of thing. And that historic material is why we love those historic buildings. So it's really not, it's really, it goes with kind of the whole idea of what we're doing with preservation. The retaining the historic character. So it's about not making modifications to the building that we lose that historic quality, whether it's a warehouse building and retaining that historic industrial quality, or it's a bank building with a beautiful banking hall and not putting all sorts of mechanical weird things in there or ripping stairs down, but just whatever that building's character is maintaining that character. And that new additions or modifications to the building are sympathetic, and that they are the cousins of the buildings instead of the spaceships that might land next door. And here's the federal and the state credits do to go together like a horse and carriage. And in fact, you can't have the state credit without the federal. So the federal's our horse, our engine, and the state credit is bringing up behind and doing a lot of good with the cart. I like this lady. She kind of looks like maybe, I've decided, maybe the Wicked Witch of the West, or just a very serious nanny. She's really good. She's teaching them math and other things like that about tax returns. But in any event, so you'll find that you, in order to, the state credit is equal to the federal credit. So you have to receive the federal credit in order to get the state credit. And I can't imagine why you wouldn't want the state credit. So there you go. It's a three-part application, and we have tried to make the state application process as simple as possible. And so, as one consultant told me, that like the Iowa state credit is a world of hurt, we're going to try and make this a joy and delight to work with. So your part one is a federal application, and it's your evaluation of the significance. So if the building's already individually listed, you don't actually need to do most times the part one. But if it's part of a district, we need to establish that it's a contributing building within the district. And let's see if I can, I got fancy. Uh-oh, good. Come on, you're supposed to do what I want you to. There we go. And our part two is another federal application. And this is where we describe the product and establish that the project meets the Department of Interior standards. And this is the bulk of the application. So you're going to go through, you have this kind of application that's, you know, getting the numbers down. But behind that is a scope of work where you describe each part of the project. You're submitting your drawings or, as you know, your details, other things like that, that really establish and help us understand that the project does meet those rehabilitation standards. And as part of the state, is the part A. We got really creative with the name, and literally there's no duplication of applications or anything. Did this just fall?
Yep.
I think the battery might be dead. So I guess I'll talk loud. The part A is just one extra piece of paper, and you attach it to your part two. There's no duplication of the process, and it is, there's also a fee that goes with it, but it's minimal, and so that's the state portion. And then the part three is the part after the project has been complete. And then essentially is we did what we promised to do. And you show us documentation that you did follow the drawings that you submitted, or that, you know, as things changed throughout the project and we discussed a new solution, that this is where we can see the results. And this is when, after the part three is certified, is when you claim the credit. And this is where the part B comes in. And that's your state portion, so that we can then instruct the Department of Revenue that you can receive the state credit. And that is, it's really not, from our standpoint, not that complicated. We just have to make sure you follow the standards.